In the wilderness, a man may do. Given any choice in the matter, James Marshall wouldn't have retained Jenny Wimmer as cook and housekeeper for his construction gang. She was stubborn, surly, belligerently unimaginative in the kitchen, and fully aware she couldn't be replaced. She cooked what she wanted, when she wanted. She served the best portions to her husband, Peter, and their 7 children. The hired hands, who bunked in the opposite end of the double log cabin that sheltered the Wimmers, were left with the toughest beef, the stringiest mutton, the stalest peas, the driest biscuits, and without the pumpkin and apple pies that varied ever so slightly the monotonous diet. Meals were served at Jenny's whim, yet she grew furious if the men weren't seated and ready when she deigned to deliver the food. The men chafed under her arbitrary rule during the late autumn of 1847. Their annoyance reached rebellion on Christmas Day, when Marshall happened to be down the river at Sutter's Fort. Most of the men were Mormons, devout Christians after their latter-day fashion, and they desired to savor their holiday and honor their Lord's birth by grooming themselves more fastidiously than the normal work schedule allowed. But Jenny Wimmer would brook no change from her routine. She rang the bell, and when they didn't appear at once, she vowed they could feed themselves. Henry Bigler was an elder of the Mormon Church and a military veteran. He had survived the anti-Mormon pogroms in Missouri and Illinois and fought Mexicans in the war not quite officially ended. He had suffered Jenny Wimmer, till now. "On Christmas morning, just at daylight, we was called to breakfast," he recorded. "We was washing our faces. We was called the second time before we was ready to obey. She told us plainly that she was boss and that we must come at the first call, which we had always had done before. This we did not like, and we revolted from under her government." Marshall returned from the fort to discover the rebellion. As insurrections went, it wasn't much. The Mormons simply insisted that they could no longer abide Jenny Wimmer's arbitrary rule. They must be allowed to build their own living quarters, where they could cook their own meals. Marshall was reluctant to grant the demand, for every hour devoted to building the new cabin would be an hour stolen from building the sawmill, which was the reason they were all wintering at this remote site, 40 miles from Sutter's settlement and many times that distance from anything that could be called civilization. But the Mormons were as irreplaceable as Jenny Wimmer. They intended to stay only till spring, when they would trek east across the mountains to join their fellow saints on the shores of the Great Salt Lake. Marshall could see no alternative. The Mormons must have their own cabin. He set aside the materials, they provided the labor, while Jenny Wimmer looked on with a mixture of disgust and good riddance. After a week's hard work, the cabin was ready. 19-year-old Azariah Smith, one of Bigler's fellow insurgents, noted with satisfaction in his diary, "Last Sunday we moved into it in order to get rid of the brawling partial mistress and cook for ourselves." John Sutter, Marshall's partner, felt much the same way about Marshall that Marshall felt about Jenny Wimmer. In Sutter's home of Switzerland, where tapping the power of falling water was an ancient art, Marshall never would have qualified as a millwright. He had built no mills nor apprenticed to anyone who had. His training, such as it was in carpentry, which was not irrelevant to the construction of the shed and platform that would house and support the millworks, but lacked the elements of smithing, of fabricating iron gears and levers and steel saw blades that distinguished the craft of genuine millwrights from the make-do approximations of amateurs.